the skit that was intended for, or the reading that was intended was just beautifully played out in a skit. So I don't think I'm even going to share with you that part of the story because I think you've already heard it. Just before we all came in here, just for transparency's sake, John had made bagels and was passing them out to everyone, and I was becoming increasingly irritated as I was standing up here watching him pass out bagels to everyone. And then I walked back in through the door, and he says to Oliver, "Oliver, God shares. We should share. Let's pass out these bagels." And I was like, "Oh, darn you, kid. You're... How dare you? How dare you become theological on what you're doing that's irritating?" So we're going to do a little catch-up. So we started this narrative lectionary a couple of weeks ago, and the Bible story has had lots of tension and momentum. Just to review, God created the world and all the people in it. Sarah and Abraham had a child in their advanced age. Jacob wrestled. And this week, we catch up to the story with Jacob's favorite son, Joseph, leading the Israelites into Egypt. They have been experiencing a famine at home, and the first thing, when things don't go well, they go to Egypt. In Egypt, they don't go so well either. They start to get... The Egyptians are very nervous. The original people that lived there are very nervous, as was acted out in the skit very nicely. And they begin to worry that the Israelites will take over. They begin oppressing them and forcing them into forced labor. Then the Egyptian king, in a bout of what I would say is pure paranoia, decides that his best move to make sure that the numbers don't get out of whack is to have all of the boy babies killed at birth. That's his plan. So things are pretty bad for the Israelites in Egypt. And then they have an encounter with God, a very direct encounter. When we started this experiment of the narrative lectionary a couple weeks ago, and I made my case for why we should do this, I said that we were going to learn new things about God, and we were going to learn new things about God and us. And this story is no different. God is a God of hope and liberation. How does God liberate us? How does God bring us hope? I have no idea in the big picture how God decides when and where to do the liberating or when and where to pass out the hope. But I know that one way God does that is through people, even those who don't feel prepared whatsoever. Like myself this morning as my son is clinging to my leg as I try to preach a sermon. So the part that we learned about was Moses and God speaking, and there's another section in there, which is kind of lengthy, so I didn't want to read the whole thing. But there's a very interesting section. The way that the king of Egypt has decided to get rid of all the Israelite boys is to have them killed. And he instructs some midwives to do the work, which I thought was very timely considering what's going on here around our church, a passage about midwives. So I'll read it now. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of them who was named Shiphra and the other Puah, when you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and you see them on the birth stool, if it's a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, she shall live. But the midwives feared God, and they did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, why have you done this and allowed the boys to live? The midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwives even come. They are very strong. So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. Then the Pharaoh commanded all his people, every boy that is born to the Hebrews you shall throw into the Nile, but you shall let every girl live. So I don't know if you caught that. That's some pretty tricky midwives there. Basically, they told the Egyptian king that they were going to do what he said and kill all the boys when they got there, but instead, oh, they're such strong ladies, they give birth so quickly, And by the time we get there, the boys are already alive, so we can't really help you out. These midwives are clearly not people with a lot of power, but they do something about the suffering that they see around them. If you notice in the passage I just read, which I find very interesting, it said that the midwives were close to God, and then it said that the midwives lied, and then right after that, it said God was really happy with them. They lied and deceived people, and God was pleased with them. The Israelites were suffering, and their suffering was compounded by this ruling about the boys being killed at birth. And so God works to lessen their suffering with the help of these two midwives. They become instruments of God's hope and liberation because they're listening for God's direction. They were tools of God's hope and liberation through deception. But in that deception, they were faithful and God was pleased. And this is how the story leads us to Moses. Moses is one of those Israelite boys that the midwives were supposed to kill. And they end up throwing him in the Nile. Instead, he is cast out in a basket and is found. Moses is a castaway, a cast off, and yet he is used by God for greatness. God, in our skit, came to Moses in a burning bush. So dramatic, so clear. I absolutely would love it if God would come to me in a burning bush and I would know that it was God with a big booming voice. Moses does get the burning bush and the booming voice, but he doesn't exactly love what God has to say. Moses knows his people are in a lot of trouble, and here's God telling Moses that he's the one that's going to liberate them and get them out of that trouble. What does Moses respond to that request for greatness? Moses tries to talk God out of it. Moses gives excuse after excuse after excuse. Don't you want somebody better than me? Don't you want somebody else? Can't somebody do this job better? And what does God respond? Nothing about Moses' credentials. Nothing about whether or not he's the best person for the job. All that God says is, I will be with you. I had promised that by looking at these stories, we would learn new things about God and about ourselves. And there's one thing that this story tells me is that people haven't changed all that much in all these years. When we feel God pulling on our sleeve and asking us to do something, one of my first responses is, are you sure you really want me to do it, God? Are you sure that I'm the person you need? Don't you want somebody more charismatic? Maybe somebody with a little more time on their hands. Maybe somebody else. We see that God uses people to create hope in dire situations. We see that God uses people to liberate the oppressed. God used the midwives, who some thought were powerless, to change the systemic oppression. God used Moses, who was way less than enthusiastic and had a rough start in life. The story also tells us something important about God and us. People interact with God in the same way they have for millions of years. We bargain with God, trying to convince God that we are ill-suited to God's work, or worse yet, incapable. Sometimes we forget that we come here to be reminded of the good news. There are so many negative things. Sometimes I get frustrated that week to week it feels like there's a new negative thing for us to talk about here in worship. The good news is that our God is a God of love and hope and liberation. The good news is that God uses us to be that hope, love, and liberation in the world around us. God is able to use us even if we are far from perfect, even if we think there's somebody better, even if we aren't that excited about the assignment. God's criteria is not the world's criteria. God sees in us that we are beloved, amazing children of God. God asks a lot, but God is with us. And the good news doesn't stop there. Not only is God a God of love, hope, and liberation for the world, God is a God of love, hope, and liberation for each of us. Even if we cannot see the path to personal liberation from where we are standing, God can. God sees us where we are at, just like he saw where the Israelites were at in Egypt. God uses God's people to provide us with hope. God uses those in our midst to liberate us from the things that oppress us. May God guide us to our own liberation. May God use us to bring about hope, liberation, and love in this world. Amen.